Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. You're going to be glad you stayed with me, too, because our good friend Joan Pride is with us. Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she just can't wait to be back on the show to visit with me and to talk to you. Right, Joan?
You just make sure you get that name right now.
Yeah, June.
Yeah, you didn't think I was going to let you get away with it.
Yeah. See, this is where you say, you can call me June,
right.
You can call me Joan,
oh,
but she doesn't have to call me Johnny. Remember that guy?
Yes, I remember that guy. You keep asking me that.
I can do the whole routine if you like.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Hey, folks, if we can't have fun, let's just forget about it. Right, Joan?
Right.
Hey, Joan, we're going to talk about the letter in a second, but there's some breaking news that we've got to talk about.
Oh, boy.
And as you know, President Obama had his third press conference in 90 days. Now, Joan, President Bush really dropped the ball, in my opinion, by not having enough press conferences.
Yeah,
and by
President
not selling.
President Clinton wasn't much better, I have to
no,
say.
No, I agree with
yeah.
you. And,
yeah.
But President Obama, is he trying to make up for all the lost?
He must
be. Is there like a quota, a quota for presidents that he's trying to you know, pick up the slack or something? Even his droolers are saying, you know, hey Barack, you got the job, quit campaigning. But seriously, he's had three, and I have to say that with all the challenges we have, it's probably he thinks it's the right thing to do, and I can't argue with that. But last night he had a question that I wanted to talk about, and that is from a guy named Jeff Zeleny, who will forever now be branded
as the
ultimate metrosexual reporter from the New York Times, which doesn't surprise me at all. He asked him this question, Joan, and you saw it. He said, "Mr. President, in the first 100 days of office, what surprised you, what troubled you, what humbled you, and wait for it, what enchanted you?"
The most,
Joan,
I guess.
You're a folks, I'm merely a talk show host. Joan Pride, and I mean this seriously, is a professional journalist. Joan, as a professional journalist, and I mean that with all the respect and admiration that is due you, were you not embarrassed and ashamed of that question?
Well, I guess the way to put this is it's something I would have expected from a television journalist.
Or a talk show host, maybe.
A radio talk show host, right.
You can see me asking him that question,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No. I couldn't believe it. He even wrote it down. He said, I was reading an account of a review of the press conference earlier this morning, and the reviewer said, with perfect comedic timing, he said something like, now, wait a minute. Let me get those down.
He did
write them down.
He made a joke of it. I'll tell you, this is that what he just did. What President Obama did when that guy asked him that question was what any red-blooded man would do, and that was to be embarrassed, to try to make as much of it out of he could, to try not to embarrass the questioner, but also to not let the audience think he took that seriously.
Right.
And so,
yeah,
and that
he really kind of straddled that very, very well.
He did it outstanding. I was very impressed.
And I couldn't wait to hear what he would answer on the enchantingly part, and I was very surprised.
What did he say?
Pleased. I think if I remember correctly, well, he said he wouldn't use the word, I think he really was basically saying he couldn't think of anything for enchanted, but he did talk about the folks in the military that he had met, that he has so much respect for, and the job they do. So he really twisted that question. He took it and used it to his advantage.
As much as I disagree with so much of the policies and the way President Obama looks at solving problems, he and I are very much different in that way. As much as I've always said, Joan, you know, I've always given him high marks for his intelligence, for his intellectual honesty, and I've always said I'd like to. He's the kind of guy I'd like to have a beer with. Well, when he said, wait a minute, let me write that down. I said, you know what? I'm buying. When we have that beer, I'm buying.
Well, I thought that was a credit card.
I was so impressed with him. But let me throw him another little warm fuzzy here, Joan. They didn't ask him one question, serious question at least, about the economy, or one question about swine flu. The truth is,
I think the first question was about swine flu.
Was it? I must have missed that
one.
But here's the thing, Joan, is I promise you, if right now you said to Mr. Obama, President Obama, would you rather have the enchanted question or the hardest question in the world about the economy? Barack Obama would have said, give me the economy question.
Oh, he would love, yes, I agree with you.
He would not have wanted to be, and he had and he had no choice but to see what he did when he said, let me write this down. That was a defense mechanism. That was telling all the guys out there, hey, guys, I'm really not a metrosexual.
And it also gave him a couple of minutes to kind of collect his thoughts, too.
But, it was funny. Boy, I mean, one thing about Barack Obama, if he has an opportunity to make a joke, to be witty, he does it, and he does it well.
Timing. You got to give him that.
I give him that. I certainly do. Folks, if you haven't seen this, you got to go see this. It'll probably be on YouTube.
It has to be. It was
you
got to
go see this.
After.
This is and this guy Zeleny, he deserves all the ridicule. Who came up with that? Do you think his? I mean, who came up with that question? Enchanted.
Well, I'd love to know.
What? I don't even know any professional female journalist that would use that word.
I don't know what they were thinking.
And doesn't that, and you know, Joan, and I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say, that's not the kind of thing that will help get the New York Times out of the basement financially.
No, exactly.
You know what I mean? Does that make you want to run out and buy their paper?
Well, I don't know.
Of course, you love the New York Times.
Well, yeah.
You love them.
I mean, one bad question isn't going to sour me on the New York Times.
But Joan, it's one more example. Is what it is.
Well, whatever. But the way I look at it is, you have one chance to ask the president a question.
Can you believe that?
And for example, there was a woman who asked a very good question about immigration, and she was, and I was marveling at her because she was someone I had never seen before. She wasn't a television journalist. She was someone, you know, she was completely unknown, and she stood there and she was articulate. I would have been a babbling idiot, I'm sure, had I been called.
Joan, you know, I'm just noticing something. I'm just recalling something. Whenever George Bush had press conferences, I don't remember you cataloging them the way you did this one somehow. There is,
right.
You know, I wonder, what's wrong with that picture, ladies and gentlemen? Quick break, right back with Joan Prine. I told you we'd have fun when Joan joined us. Stay with us, 20 after.
Turn around and see you in a crowded place. What's with the emotions on a guarded face?
Little Joe Cocker bringing us back. That's a madman from England. We're rocking and rolling with our good friend Joan Pride. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance. And write me a letter. Do what Joe says. Write me a letter. Comment on my blog if you want to. Check it out. You can find it right off the homepage. Subscribe to my free newsletter, which you can find there as well. You can comment on that too. That comes to you every Sunday afternoon by email. You can subscribe to the blog too. We'll send that to you. We'll follow you home. If you don't want to keep coming back, we'll follow you right home and keep delivering things to you from the website, from the newsletter, from the blog. My knowledge base is there. If you got 30 seconds, you got 5 seconds, you got 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes. We got something that will help you. Either you can listen to or read. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter as well, at Jim Blassingame. So check that out. Joan Pride is our guest. Joan, are you on Twitter?
What? I keep asking what that is, and you won't tell me.
We'll talk. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, ladies and gentlemen. She's one of the hip members of the journalism profession, right, Joan?
Oh yeah, that's me.
Yep. Hey, Joan. I want you to read the first line of the letter this week because I don't want people to think I'm editorializing. Go ahead.
Think taxes are too high now? Just wait.
See, even Kiplinger says this, they're going to be too high.
right.
Yeah. So what's the news, Joan? Taxes are going to smack firms and individuals, you say?
Yeah, we don't just say they're going to smack them.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to. Did your mother ever say that? If you don't shut up, I'm going to smack you.
I guess the standard that the president has set was couples making more than $250,000 a year and singles making more than $200,000 a year.
Yeah.
And in the first round of tax cuts, I think that's going to be pretty much true, that the tax cuts will only hit those people. But we're saying in later rounds to come, and we don't know how this is going to play out, but in later rounds to come, given all of his priorities and the things he wants to do, we don't see how he can make the numbers work unless he also raises taxes on people below those levels.
Yeah, and you said tax cuts, but you didn't mean tax cuts.
No, sorry, I meant tax increases.
You meant tax increases,
So we
knew what you meant. But the thing is that's exactly right. And I just want to remind people that $250,000, ladies and gentlemen, is in a small business, is not $250,000 in cash laying around. $250,000 includes the income from both spouses, and the income from the sub S corporation or the LLC corporation, or the LLC, I should say, that the company, their small business, provides, and that income drops right down to them. And whatever income comes from the company that has to be taxed at this new rate, is not available in cash, Joan. It's in receivables and inventory and in the workings of the company, in the working capital of the company. So
right.
It's possible that a small business, Joan, it's quite possible a successful small business could have, say, $125,000 worth of W-2 income and $125,000 worth of corporate income, but yet they'd have to pay taxes as if they had $250,000 of W-2 income. So it's going to hurt small businesses.
Right.
So let's move on, Joan. The rising to the top list is going to be individuals or boosted. They're going to boost the marginal rates to what, Joan?
Well, and before I continue, I just want to, so the people don't get too frightened here. And this is the question we get most often: is this happening this year? And the answer is no.
When's it going to happen?
So what? Pardon me.
When is it going to happen?
Well, what's going to happen is basically this is the question: is whether the Bush tax cuts will be allowed to expire, and what Obama is proposing, and we think the Democratic Congress will agree with him on, is letting the Bush tax cuts expire for people making more than those amounts that we talked about earlier. And the Bush tax cuts expire at the end of 2010.
Yeah, next year.
There's a lot of fear that the increase that would come in 2011 is going to be speeded up. But as far as we know now, that we don't see anything like that. But in answer to your question... Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, in answer to your question, what's going to happen in 2011, the top marginal income tax rates, which are now 33% and 35%, we believe will go to 36% and 39.6%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, Joan, I'd like to point out one thing, folks, that's a marker of our government, of our Congress, of the political class. When they raise taxes, when they institute a regulation, it goes on the books in perpetuity. But when they cut something out, they always give it a sunset date, it seems, Joan, because when they cut the only way that they would allow one part of our government would allow the Bush tax cuts, as you call them, back a few years ago, was if there was a day when those tax cuts would go away. They gave them a sunset date, which is 2010.
You know why that is.
Tell us why.
Well, it's something called the out years, which I've never understood. It sounds like a movie title, but it's not.
Right.
It has to do with the way you work the budget numbers.
But my point, Joan, is they don't have any out year concern for tax increases. They don't have any tax out year concerns for regulations.
Well, you wouldn't, because that's money coming in the door.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But the and I know I've talked about this before, but the most egregious of all this, folks, is the estate tax, which goes to zero next year, but then on January 1, 2011, it comes back as if it had never been changed. Now they passed that law, folks, without any sense of shame or anyway. Stand by. Here we go.
Jim Blasingame, he's the cyber king of small business. Search Google for small business expert, and he's tops on the list.
I guess that makes you number one.
He's number one on Google and number one in our hearts.
Aww.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Still having fun with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're having a good time here talking about. We're enjoying our visit, but the conversation, Joan, is about a very depressing topic: tax increases. And I was ranting. I was on my rant so much about the estate tax, which I mean, folks, if somebody said to you, give me an example of how the political class have no shame. Tell them about the estate tax that they allowed to go down to zero, and then within the next year, over just in the tick of a clock from midnight to 12:01, it goes completely back to where it had been 10 years before.
And
Joan,
who
does that without any sense of shame?
And who was running Congress then?
Well, in those days, it was bipartisan because the Republicans couldn't get it all the way through without a filibuster in the Democrats. That's what was going on.
But notice,
Joan, I didn't say Democrat or Republican. I said the political class.
Mm-hmm.
The political class. Joan, there's not much difference. There's very little difference between any of them, Joan.
It was the Republicans, right? I think it was.
Well, they didn't create that part of it. If you're trying to push me into a comment on that.
Of course I am. Yeah.
I promise you the Republicans did not want to sunset President Bush's tax cuts. They wanted
it
permanent.
But they had majorities in the House and Senate
But they couldn't get it passed. They had to compromise to get what they got passed because they didn't have that much of a majority. But Joan, I'm you're not going to bait me on this. It's the political class. I have a very low regard for most of them, frankly. I'm very disappointed in the whole bunch of them. But anyway, let's move on down. I want to talk about the. Did you have something to say about the estate tax?
Yeah, I think we need to explain to the listeners what's going to happen with the estate tax.
Go ahead.
Or what we think, because you described very well what current law is. But we don't believe Congress is going to allow current law to stand because it's just too much of a yo-yo.
This is the estate tax, right?
Right, the estate tax. Now, this year's estate tax exemption amount for people who die in 2009 is $3.5 million. It's been ratcheting up each year from $1 million. Now it's $3.5 million. And the
that's the exemption rate, below which you don't have to pay any tax.
Right. If your estate is $3.5 million or below, you don't pay estate tax. And then you only pay, if it's $4 million, you're only paying estate tax on $500,000, not on $4
million. Right. Okay.
Anyway, and the top rate is 45%, but the important number is really that $3.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
What we think is going to happen is that they will more than likely just continue the 2009 levels for several years or permanently. Now, there is a move to try to get that $3 million nudged up to something more like, say, $5 or $6 million,
mm-hmm.
but it remains to be seen whether that's going to be possible.
It needs to be $15 or $20 million. It needs to go away.
Let them know.
It needs to go away. Because, folks, these estates, these farms, these small business estates that are going to be taxed have already paid taxes on the things that they've acquired. And to retax them again, in my opinion, is criminal. Joan, I thank you for that good coverage on that. Let's talk about this other thing, this itemized deduction cap, because this is a big deal, Joan. This thing about capping the kinds of deductions that people can take, which I think is going to have a negative impact on charities. What do you think?
Well, and the charities are very concerned about that. Now, this the cap on itemized deductions is something that Obama has proposed, and it was shot down pretty quickly. by both Republicans and Democrats in Congress. But I think my thinking is that he's not going to give up on this because he likes this idea. So he's going to keep pushing. I'm not saying he's going to win, but it's still going to be an option on the table he's going to push for. So you kind of have to watch it.
The thing we have to remember is in other countries, the individuals don't give a lot of money to charities. The government takes care of the charities, and those societies have gotten used to the government doing that. In America, it's not that way. In America, individuals, Americans, Joan, as you know very well, are the most generous people on planet Earth.
I'll bet.
And I mean, we saw that back when the tsunami hit Asia, Joan. There was this big cry, hue and cry, because other countries had given more than the United States, but they were comparing government to government. When they included the U.S. citizens' contribution, we blew everybody else out of the water.
I'm sure we did.
See, and that was a dramatic example of how benevolent, how generous that Americans are as individuals to people who need money. We've been doing this for a long time, and so when you start changing the deductibility of those, it's going to hurt charities, and it's going to change, I think, a lot of things in this country that we don't want to have changed. 20 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, but you know, that's just me. Stay with us.
Stranded again, so off I ran. A young world crashing around me.
Little Heart, bringing this back. That's the voice of Anne. That's the guitar playing of Nancy's sisters. Good music. Welcome back, 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. But I also like telling you about Kiplinger's website, Kiplinger. .com. It's a good one, and from there you can find their publications, like the Kiplinger letter that Joan and I work off of every week. That's the weekly flagship letter, now in its 86th year of business. Joan, that's just an incredible feat.
Boy,
I was bragging on you guys in the opening segment about an 86-year-old third-generation small business, family-owned business, out there duking it out with the big guys. My hat's off to you. You guys rock, and I just admire the whole thing that you guys do, and I hope you just keep up the good work and keep fighting all the conglomerates and the consolidations and everything, because you guys, you're able to keep the faith. You're able to keep it real, as the kids say. You know, I mean, you guys can. You're able to do what you want to do. You're not beholden to Wall Street. Let me tell you something. Being beholden to Wall Street is the death of any industry.
It's hard. It's definitely hard.
I mean, I saw that happen to radio. It happened to radio. Radio consolidated, and then they went Wall Street, and then Wall Street started jerking their chain.
Yeah.
And so much, a lot of what's on radio today has been influenced by Wall Street, and it's not good. But of course, this show is not influenced by Wall Street, John.
Of course not.
As you know, we're so far.
Main Street.
We're so far away from Wall Street. It's not funny. And just far enough. They also have their four biweekly letters, folks: the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter. And then they got that magazine thing.
It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And a phone number, please.
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Joan, you always get me on these rants. Why do you set me off like that?
You can do it all by yourself.
Can I do it? Did you watch any of the Talladega race on Sunday, Joan?
What the heck is that?
The NASCAR race. You didn't watch any of that?
What?
The rest of the world watches that, Joan, except for you.
I know nothing about NASCAR.
But they were talking about this guy being three wide all by himself on the turn.
And
anyway,
I do not know what that means.
I'm going to have to, I know you don't, but anyway, I'll work on, well, folks, I'm going to work on Joan. I'll get her. Bring her into the 21st century soon. Joan, let's talk about energy. Russia, do we have to tip our hats to Russia, Angola, and Brazil now?
Apparently.
I don't have a problem with Brazil. Russia and Angola, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
Tell us what's going on there.
Well, we're saying that all three of these countries doubled their exports to the U.S. in the first quarter of 2009, and they want to.
I'm giving them a standing ovation here, Joan.
Yeah, they want to. Wow. They want to keep it up. That's what
we like that.
We
like that in an enemy, don't we?
That's right. We sure do.
Yeah. So, okay, guys. Yeah, so they just basically. They just basically render OPEC null and void, don't they, when they do that?
Well, that's our point, pretty much, OPEC and particularly Saudi Arabia. Because Saudi Arabia, we're saying, and Nigeria had cut back on output.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I like it when we have these rogues out there. And of course, you know, John, I love the line somebody told me one time. They said, countries don't have friends, they have interests.
No, that's true. That's right.
And so Russia is hurting right now financially.
Right.
You know, they're a one-trick pony, pretty much, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Their energy industry is the only thing they have.
Yeah.
To any great degree, they aren't capable of making much else, just pulling things out of the ground and delivering them. And so when the price of oil went from $140 a barrel, where they were acting like they were going to be the next, you know, second coming.
Yeah.
And then now it's down around 40 in the 40s, and they're sucking wind over there. They got no choice but to pump a lot of oil, do they?
Right, that's right.
So that's a good thing. And so you guys also say that you think oil is going to dip below $40 a barrel by the end of next month, right?
Yes, but then when you start the summer driving season, we think it's going to go back up to 53. But
all
you know what?
All the way to 53.
I'll take 53. I'll take it, especially since we used to be talking about $400 a barrel of oil.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, as long as it's in the 40 range, Joan, somewhere near 40, you know, in where it's on one side or the other of 45 or 6,
right,
Joan, we got $2 a gallon gas.
Okay. That's okay.
And most of us can deal with that. You know, I'm still nostalgic for 23 cents a gallon, Joan. I actually remember those days.
You're going to have to get over that.
But I'm not nostalgic for $4 a gallon gas.
Yeah, that's right.
Holy mackerel. That's ridiculous. So, Joan, Hawaii, though, is working on something I thought was interesting. They're working on their world, their universe over there kind of suits electric cars, doesn't it?
Well, I guess because... In my estimation, because I would think it's hard to get cars over to them and get gas over to them, and everything is so
expensive
over there.
That's part of it. But Joan, there are no road trips. There are no road trips in Hawaii. You know what I mean? Remember when people would come out of your dorm and say road trip? You know, and everybody pile in, and you know, you take off for 3,000 miles or something. That doesn't happen in Hawaii. God bless them; they got wonderful stuff over there. It's a beautiful place. I'm told. I've never been there, but there are no road trips in Hawaii, Joan. There's no crying in baseball, and there's no road trips in Hawaii. So anyway, the truth is, though, is I think that the state is trying to encourage people to buy electric cars, right? They're going to give them some kind of grants or something.
That's right.
So you know, and see, that's the kind of thing, Joan, that we need to do in this over here on the mainland. We need to be encouraging innovation, not taxing consumption. That's the point I made in my recent article about whether the zealots are wrong or not. Until right back, we got some small business news and a little bit of politics after these messages. Stay with us. More rock and roll from the Wilson sisters. This is a good one too. 7 Till, welcome back. A little word from Ann there. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm your DJ for the hour. Joan Pride is assisting me on the other turntable, right, Joan?
That's right.
Senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, she is. And Joan, I'm coming to D.C. in a couple of weeks. I just want to give you fair warning.
Wow.
Folks, in the week of the 18th of December, I'm going to be in D.C. You know, you think I could speak after all these years.
You would think.
The week of the 18th of May, we will be in Washington, D.C., celebrating Small Business Week with the brand new administrator, Cheryl Mills.
Wow. That's
who's on
cool.
board
so
now.
You will meet her for the first time.
I will meet her, and hopefully we'll get her on the show pretty
soon.
But, I mean, I've had this. She will be my fourth administrator to work with.
Wow, you're getting old.
One in the Clinton administration, two in the Bush administration, and now this one, and two different parties.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking forward to that, and I'll be up there. Small Business Week is the week of the 18th of May. I'll be in D.C. near you, and looking forward to seeing you. So you've got plenty of time to get out of town, Joan, before I get there.
I got to make my plans now.
And so, Joan, small business is on your radar this week in the newsletter. I mean, in the Kiplinger letter, with the SBA. Tell us what's happening.
Well, in terms of coming soon from the Small Business Administration, they're working on a program with short-term interest-free loans, which sounds pretty good. You could get up to $35,000 for up to 6 months, and it's fully government-guaranteed. And as we put it, if you need some help paying down debt in this icy patch.
Now, you also say demand is likely to exceed supply. Now, the problem with the SBA, Joan, the problem they got is they're not widely diffused in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Only a very tiny percentage of all small businesses actually have ever done business with the SBA. Of course, they don't actually do business with the SBA. They do business with a financial institution like your local bank who originates the loan.
Right.
They originate the loan, and the government becomes your co-maker on that loan for anywhere from 70 to 100% in this last case you mentioned. And so they co-sign the loan with you, basically. And so the bank makes a loan. But, Joan, one of the things that we don't know about that you guys didn't have, and maybe we don't know, is how is this interest-free loan going to be handled? How is it going to be administered? Somebody has to originate the loan. Somebody has to manage it and take the payments, that kind of thing, make sure that you comply with it. I don't know what that channel is going to be. Is it going to be banks? Is it going to be some kind of financial institution like CIT or somebody like that? Who will we do business with? I need more news. I need more information.
Right.
So we'll have to keep up with that.
Yeah.
It's just a proposal, though, right? We don't know for sure.
Coming soon. I think I know which editor wrote this, so I can research it for you and get back to you.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I'm glad to know this. This will make people, but folks, here's what you got to do. You've got to go talk to your banker about this and say, do you know about this? And if your banker is not an SBA loan lender, go find one who is, because they're in your town. Somewhere in your town is a banker that is familiar with and comfortable with the SBA rules and requirements, which are not that big a deal, and do business with that banker. And it'll probably be an independent community bank. Joan, let's move over and talk about politics. In his first 100 days, the report's mixed. People like Obama, but on his policies, he's only got about a 50-50 approval rating.
Right. We say he stumbled on some of his appointments. He's struggling with bank policy. He angered the right wing for being too willing to apologize, you know, overseas for what he's done in the past.
I didn't like that.
So, you know, there's been good and bad during the first 100 days. Although, you remember, the first 100 days is such an arbitrary...
It's a tough one. It is. And I'll tell you, Joan, on this stumbling on appointments, I mean, how lily white do you have to be these days not to be stumbled over?
Well, that's the problem.
But Joan, he got some good news yesterday or this week, didn't he?
He sure did.
With Mr. Flipper from Pennsylvania,
who flipped once. I had forgotten this. Who flipped once many, many years ago?
30 years ago.
Yeah.
He lurched uncontrollably to sanity, and now he's lurched back. And it's a political, pragmatic thing he's done here.
And he admits that. He says it himself.
And to his credit, I give him credit for that. Yeah. He said, "I can't win as a Republican in Pennsylvania."
He can't win the Republican primary in Pennsylvania this year, so he's switching parties.
So now we need Lieberman to switch back over to Republican. See, wouldn't that be fun?
That would be fun.
I'd buy a ticket for that show. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.